Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news ad free. That's amazon.com/news ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Today on the show, I join Michael McMillian of the Bigfoot Collectors Club podcast to discuss my top five favorite UFO cases.
So John Burroughs, along with his attorney and John McCain's approval, they all went to the Veteran Affairs and said, you need to help this guy. You need to help him. And he won the case.
Yeah.
So this is the first documented case that the Veteran Affairs has said, this man was directly affected by a UFO event and his health deteriorated and we got to help him.
That's insane.
Oh. Yeah.
That's mind blowing. Wow.
This is Somewhere in the Skies with Ryan Sprague.
We have Ryan Sprague with us from Somewhere in the Skies podcast, and I asked Ryan to bring in his top five UFO stories, his favorite encounter stories. And I got a sneak peek at this list. And the cool thing is, I don't think we've done any of these on the show yet. So this might be a good tease or a good, a signpost to point towards where maybe Bigfoot Collectors Club needs to go next.
Nice. Yeah.
What do you got? I want to ask you this. What is, in your mind, what makes for a good UFO story?
A good UFO story for me is not the same prototypical thing over and over again. You know, it was saucer shaped. It was there for a second and then it zipped away. I believe it happened, but for me, like, that proves nothing.
Right.
Absolutely nothing. So give me some sort of physical evidence, whether it's photographic, whether it's video, whether it's trace evidence. If I can go to the site and actually find something, is there traces of radiation in the area? Can the FAA tell me that they did or did not have aircraft in the air at that time in that area? What were the weather conditions? Everything plays into it.
Now, how often are you actually, as a ufologist, doing that kind of stuff? How often are you actually investigating these kind of accounts?
Yeah, I mean, for me, I am a UFO journalist before
right.
anything. So I do tell people I am a little armchair researchy. Mm-hmm. I am. I do the show. I write articles about it. But I'm not like these individuals who work for the Mutual UFO Network, MUFON, who go out there and actually investigate.
Mm-hmm.
I've done that several times, and I love doing it. But I like relaying stories. I am definitely a relayer of stories and information. So, yeah, I'd say it's probably like an 80-20 sort of percentage
okay, cool.
that I'm actually out there, boots on the ground.
Right.
I think I'd be scared of some of the stuff I might find. I'm
based
not gonna
on
lie.
Some of the stories on your podcast, I would be too.
Yeah, yeah. So,
right.
yeah.
So what's your – should we go from least favorite to favorite, like your bottom to top? Are these in particular order? Is this
always
a countdown list?
Yeah.
Countdown list? You want to do a countdown style?
A countdown? All right. Cool.
So number
five.
Yeah.
Number five. For number five, I would have to go with probably Roswell. I mean, it's an easy one to sort of go to, but it is also kind of what we have and to prove that there is a UFO cover-up.
Right. Establishes the narrative of so
totally.
Many things that come afterwards.
Yeah. Yeah. 1947. Again, the beginning of the modern UFO era. We had one case before that, the Kenneth Arnold flying saucer sighting.
Right.
Where the actual term flying saucer was first coined,
right.
Later changed to UFO by the U.S. government. A lot of people don't know that to sort of squelch the idea that this could be alien. So, yeah, I'm going to go with Roswell for number five. Yeah.
If you have to come to just a quick conclusion about Roswell, was it an alien craft and were there bodies?
Was there an alien craft and were there bodies? I know this is sort of passive. I'm going to go 50-50.
Okay.
I 50% believe it could possibly be extraterrestrial and probably even splitting that 50% to if there were bodies. Mm-hmm. I did interview people who claim that. There's evidence that something was found. We spoke to descendants of the gentleman who worked at the funeral home in Roswell, New Mexico.
Yeah, that story is pretty fascinating.
It's fascinating.
Where they, the Air Force allegedly called him and asked for, I think, 4 to 5 child-sized coffins. And at first he was like, I'm going to have to special order those because we don't keep kid coffins in the funeral home. And they're like, oh, okay. You know, and he's like, what is going on?
What is happening? And he did ask that. He's like, yeah. if there was an accident in Roswell.
Because he's scared that there were dead kids. Yeah. He's like, what's going on?
What happened? Yeah. And they said, you do not have a need to know for that. Just do you have it?
Yeah.
He didn't. He got him ordered and he doesn't know what happened from there. So
fascinating.
Yeah.
I also love this story. It's that story. And then Mac Brazel is the one who we also get a clue that there were bodies, mm-hmm. which is because he got paid off, I think, from the Air Force to keep his mouth shut.
Yes, he did.
Yeah. And he took some of that money to the bar and was getting drunk. People were making fun of him. And someone's like, you've seen little green men. And he supposedly walked out drunk and turned around and said, they weren't green and left, which is one of my favorite little...
Gives me chills.
Yeah, right?
Either he was serious or he's like a master at suspense.
suspenseful comebacks.
Yeah. He was not that witty, I can tell you that much from what I've heard. But
sure,
a lot of people also don't know there's two crash sites involved with this thing.
Corona, and where's the other crash site?
Supposedly, it is both near Corona.
Okay.
A lot of people think it happened in Roswell. It did not.
That's just where the stuff was brought.
Exactly. Yeah, the closest town that could do anything with it. What we discovered is there was the impact site where the thing actually crashed, went back up.
Bounced.
And literally went miles and miles and miles away and actually landed.
Then that's when it...
The
finale happened.
Exactly. And that's where supposedly the whatever occupants were in this craft found coverage in a little cave area.
Right.
And so that's interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And is that why some people think that there were two crafts that crashed that night?
Possibly.
Because, but you're saying, and I would tend to agree with you, that it was a thing where it skidded, it hit once, got back up in the air for miles, and then finally came back down.
I think so. If that thing was coming in at the trajectory that we've been told it has, and a lot of testimony of, you know, what happened, I could understand that, like, coming in at that force. And if you look at the debris that supposedly has been found and was picked up by the military, tiny particles of, like, some sort of metallic objects, burnt, bent, charred. Like, this thing exploded at a tremendous speed.
Wow.
So it shattered.
Right.
It absolutely shattered. So,
yeah. I always wondered if this alien metal was so malleable, how it would fall apart in a crash.
Right.
But I guess if the impact's hard enough and the...
Either that or a lot of people think it got shot down.
Yeah.
Too. So, or that they tried to land it and they were looking for a flat area to crash land the object after they were, you know...
Shot down. Struck by lightning, perhaps. Because there was a lightning storm that night.
There was. Yeah. Yep.
All right, cool. So let's go to number four.
Number four.
I'm going to go with the Carlos de Santos UFO of 1975.
I don't think I know this story.
Yeah, I didn't know it either, to be honest, until I spoke to a gentleman who strictly investigates cases out of the Southwest and Mexico. And this happened to a gentleman. He was flying a private plane, Piper at the time, and he was heading to Mexico City. And as he was in the air, he saw three saucer-shaped objects coming towards him. Mm-hmm. He started radioing, being like, who's around me? What's going on here? And all his instruments started to fail. His transmissions with the flight towers were starting to fail. And the objects just got closer and closer until he could actually make out that they were saucer-shaped. And they surrounded his plane. And then one of them actually hit his fuselage.
What?
Yeah, crashed into his plane, and he started going out of control. He started getting back on the radio and finally got in touch with the FAA, whoever was in that area at the time, the flight towers, I should say, and mayday, mayday, I've just been hit. I don't know what's going on. I don't know what to do. And we have actual audio documentation of this happening.
Wow.
You can find it online. Yeah.
Did he see portals on the saucers? Did he...
From what I can gather from his testimony...
Pilots?
No pilots. All he could see was a dome-shaped craft, solid dome-shaped, not like a glass thing with occupants.
Not like the Jetsons.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So he couldn't see inside of them. He was too busy just trying to gain control of his instruments and his plane. He didn't know what to do, and he started... He thought he was going to crash.
So how did you make it to an airport?
So what happened was... As he was trying to gain control, he said that these craft, these technology, whatever, actually helped him safely land at the airport. They got him to a point where he could gain control. They disappeared off into the mountains, and he was able to land. But when he got down there, clearly something had hit his plane.
Right.
They were like, holy shit. The people who showed up there were like, what? What the hell happened to your plane? There's no reason you should be alive right now.
Was that documented at the time?
Yep.
The photos of the plane and everything?
Yep. Immediately, they got this guy into like a psych ward, a hospital, first of all. Check him out. And they said, he's fine. Like, he seems traumatized, but like, he's perfectly sane. And it's crazy.
Wow.
It's crazy.
What was the name of that again?
Carlos de los Santos case, 1975.
Cool.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Awesome. Yeah. Love that. Yeah, we'll have to look into that one.
Yeah.
All right. Number three.
All right. I'm going to go with the Rendlesham case.
Love the Rendlesham case.
Have you guys covered that?
We've talked about it. We haven't done a full episode devoted to it yet.
Okay. Yeah.
It's one of those big ones where we try to spread them out a little bit. You know? It's tough. But we have talked about it.
Okay, cool. You don't want to play all your cards at once. Rendlesham, 1980. This was on a joint military base in England. Rendlesham Forest connected these two bases. And there was a craft that supposedly landed in the forest. And clearly they had this thing caught on radar and they saw it land. So the bases go into emergency mode. They send dozens and dozens of officers out there to investigate what this thing was. And I've spoken to many of the officers who have come forward about their experiences with it. My unique involvement was with this is I was in New York at the time as a struggling playwright trying to write a play about this UFO case. So that's how I got in touch with some of the officers and one of the lead investigators on the case. And that was my sort of peripheral introduction to it. Since then, it's just crazy where this case
is. Didn't one of them look at hieroglyphics on the ship and then it was like writing shit down in binary code or something that actually made some sense?
So, I mean, this guy, Jim Peniston, one of the officers who actually touched the craft, got that close. He said the minute he touched it, he saw strange objects on it. When he touched it, something was downloaded into his brain, this binary code. He was able to write it down quick as it was happening to him. Same with what the craft looked like, what the hieroglyphics looked like. And since then, they've gotten this binary code decoded, and it's ley lines. It's these areas throughout the world that a lot of weird stuff lands on, the pyramids, this, that. And one of the ley lines is apparently Rendlesham Forest.
Oh, wow.
So you have to wonder, why did it land there and what was it and did this actually happen to him?
But no entities seen in that.
Yes.
Okay, there were.
There were, according to one officer at the time. Very controversial guy came forward. His name is Larry Warren, and he said that when he went out there as a security police officer, he saw the craft, he saw his superiors talking to someone, but when he got closer, who they were talking to were 3 feet tall.
No way.
Glowing. All that stuff you hear about in the Hopkinsville case.
What's that with the glow in the dark aliens?
Yeah.
Why don't we have more of those?
I know. It's like a Twilight vampire, I guess.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's very controversial. He's the only one who's claimed that there were entities seen at the site. So you got to take that for what it's worth.
Right.
But yeah, fascinating case.
So a few people sent a link, which I have not looked at this weekend. This past weekend, about there's some connection between that and John McCain.
Have you seen that? Yeah, that's funny you mentioned that. I just covered that on my show.
Oh, really? What was the? Can you nutshell that real quick? What the connection between John McCain?
Yeah, and totally.
They say I'm disturbed.
Welcome to Hysteria 51, a weekly oddcast of mysteries, conspiracies, the unusual, and the unexplained.
Do we have a laser thermometer to figure out if Admiral Byrd is here? I'm pointing the laser at the wall now. 71.1, 71.2, Admiral Byrd is here.
With John, Brent, and Conspiracy Bot.
You're all idiots.
Yeah. Join them each week as they clarify conspiracies.
I'm a Stuart Swerdlow. I promise I am human and I do human things.
Explore enigmas.
It's all about ley lines, and you'd understand that if I could explain it to you.
And probe the paranormal. Hysteria 51 is a hilarious expedition into the eccentric.
Stop on my joke.
I will when they're good.
Tune in each week and subscribe on Apple Podcasts, the iHeartRadio app, or wherever you listen to podcasts. And remember, the truth is out there, but you won't find it here.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey, woke meat sex.
So, a few years ago, the other gentleman that was with John Peniston, the guy who touched the craft, he was there with him at the time. And he had a completely different experience. He blacked out when this all happened.
Like Calvin Parker did with the Pascagoula. He blacked out.
Yep. It seems that always one blacks out and another has the experience.
Yeah, weird.
So this guy, John Burroughs, he blacked out during all this, wakes up to see the craft descend into the air and disappear. He didn't talk about it for a really long time. When the whistle eventually blew on this whole case and a lot of officers came forward, he started having weird health problems due to radiation.
Mm.
And they asked him, when were you around radiation? He said, the only thing I could think of was this weird thing that happened to me back in the 80s when I was on this base. So what is up with that? Did this craft have some sort of radiation effect on him? He believes so. Mm-hmm. He got checked out by the Veterans Hospital, and they were like, dude, what the hell happened to you? This is far beyond what any human being should have in their system in terms of like trace radiation. And he's like, I don't know, but like I'm having a lot of things happen. This was life-threatening for him. Like this could have like really – it could have killed him. So what he did is tried to get surgery and everything done through the Veteran Affairs, because he can't afford that.
Yeah.
You know? And it was a big sort of back and forth and argument for a long time with the Veteran Affairs. Like, we can't cover this, this, that. John McCain somehow heard about this and was like, I am all for our veterans getting the help they can from this. So John Burroughs, along with his attorney and John McCain's approval, they all went to the Veteran Affairs and said, you need to help this guy.
Wow.
You need to help him. And he won the case.
Yeah.
So this is the first documented case that the Veteran Affairs has said, this man was directly affected by a UFO event and his health deteriorated and we got to help him.
That's insane.
Oh. Yeah.
That's mind blowing. Wow. Awesome story.
Yeah.
All right. Number two.
All right. This one is really fascinating to me. This is a woman I interviewed actually in my book. This happened in 2005. Her name is Patty. I won't give away her last name, but she had a triangular UFO sighting in Michigan over her home.
What year?
This was 2005. Yeah, 2005.
Oh, in 2005. Sorry. Yeah. Okay.
No, not at all. And she went out with her dogs to take them for a walk at night. Dogs would not leave the porch. Never happened before. She didn't know why. She went out, saw this triangular thing right above their home. She yells for some of her family to come out. One of her daughters runs out and sees the thing too. So, okay, she's not imagining this. And as they're looking up at this triangular thing, Patty, the mother, starts feeling euphoric and like, this is an incredible experience I'm having. I can't explain what I'm feeling, but it's beautiful and it's silent, hovering above me. Meanwhile, she asks her daughter, like, what's going on? She looks over, her daughter's covering her ears and saying how unbearably loud this thing is above them.
Whoa.
And that it's dangerous, and she felt like it was a threat. So right there, that really drew me in. They were having completely different experiences looking at the same exact thing. One said it was silent. One said it was unbearably loud. But it gets even weirder. After this initial event, the third person involved, the younger daughter, one night she wakes up and she's going to the bathroom and she sees this weird dark entity leaving her parents'
Yikes,
room.
No, thank you, Shadow Man. Get out of my house.
Yep. That was my first inclination, like shadow people, or like maybe like she was tired, her eyes were playing tricks on her, but she saw the thing start heading to her own bedroom. So she runs into her room, gets under the covers, and next thing she knows, she hears her mom's voice in the room, and she takes the covers down, and her mom's like, her mom's there, she's there, she's definitely there, saying, honey, I heard like footsteps outside, what's going on, is everything okay? When the mom's asking this, the entity is in the room, surveying the room, looking at stuff, like touching things, and she's petrified. She can't even like tell her mom.
Mom,
like,
doesn't see
look
it.
Over there. Mom doesn't see it. So she kind of calms her down. She's like watching the entity look around, and as the mom's leaving the room, the entity follows the mom out, and then that's all she remembers after that. She eventually somehow goes back to sleep. I don't know how.
I would never sleep again.
Dude, yeah. I know. And this is one of those cases where I'm like, things just keep getting weirder and weirder. They started having weird poltergeist activity in the home after that, after these events. And their electricity went out at one point. They had Con Ed or whoever come out and see what was going on. As the Con Ed guy is trying to fix their electricity, he sees a UFO above the house.
What?
And he goes into their house and tells them, I'm out of here. I'll send someone else. I got to get out of here. And it just kept going and going. It was crazy.
It's crazy because that sounds like a ghost story, but the ghosts are aliens.
Yeah.
Like, it's definitely like aliens haunting a family.
Yes.
Like, we're picking you guys out, we're kind of claiming the house, yep. We're using the house, we're scaring away like the rationally minded people, you know what I mean? It, there's no difference in story structure
right. Between
that and a good haunting.
Right. Yeah.
Fascinating.
It was like the doors were open. It started with a UFO and then like poltergeist slipped in, a shadow person or alien entity was like, okay, I'm going to go mess with them now that you opened Pandora's box. I don't know. I'm still working with Patty on this case because things are still developing. Wow. She's still having weird stuff go on. The daughters don't really want to talk about it. And
this
I don't
sounds
blame them.
Similar to the Copley Woods stuff, too. Yep. It really does.
Yep, it does. So, yeah, developing case, still working with her. I'm sure I'm going to talk to her within the next couple months to see if check back in, see if anything
else
has happened.
Any photos, anything? Is there photographic evidence? Do they have pictures of the ship or anything?
Oh, they
do of the craft?
They have photos of the craft, and
have
they're actually
them?
Pretty compelling. Yep.
Are they available to the public? Not yet.
No.
Maybe in your book?
Possibly.
Okay, got it.
Maybe future. If you want to see them, I can definitely try to
like
get them
to see those.
To
we
you.
Will
yeah.
not.
Yeah, I would be interested in seeing them.
I will have to check with her first, but she has shared them before in the public. So, yeah, I will definitely try to get that
love
to you.
Love to see those.
Yeah. Little bonus for the Patreon.
Yeah, if we can share it with our
that
listeners,
really
that'd be
that
awesome, too.
$5 a month go a long way.
Add another $5 to see these photos now.
Step right this way. Fascinating. All right.
Yeah.
All right. Number one.
All right. So this is the case that I go to whenever anybody asks me for documentation. So I did a Freedom of Information request a couple years ago now to the Department of Intelligence, the DIA, part of the DOD. And I had heard about this case. I'd heard stories about it, but I wanted to see if I could actually get anything on it. And I did. They actually responded
like, this
to
This is
me.
Why he has a real paranormal podcast.
Well, we talked about, like, if I'm a boots-on-the-ground investigator. I am more of, like, an armchair researcher, so I wanted to do my due diligence and see what I could find on this, so I hammered them for any information on this one. And I waited probably a year and a half to actually get a response from them.
Wow.
And they apologized. They said, we are so backlogged, like, we're sorry, but you got to be careful when you do these requests, because if you don't go in with specifics, they're not going to give you shit.
Right.
So you have to do your homework before you make these requests. I reached out to a gentleman who told me exactly how I should word this, who I should direct it to, and he was right.
So what was the case?
So
what was
this
the
was
incident,
and
then
who
was the right person to go to?
The right person to go to was the Department of Intelligence, and this was the Tehran case of 1967.
Oh.
Yeah, yeah.
This rings a bell.
Yeah. So this happened in Tehran, Iran, and strange lights were being seen over the town, and people started contacting local law enforcement and the airport, be like, what's going on? Like, there's weird stuff being seen in the area. Like, should we be worried? Is this an attack of some sort? And so the local Air Force base got involved, and they were like, what? Like, we know nothing about this. We got some weird blips on our radar, but we should probably investigate this. So they sent two pilots up to look for whatever people were seeing. And once they got up there, they saw these weird, brilliant, bright lights. And the closer they got, the less their instrumentation would work.
Wow.
So they got a little scared at that point. They're like, I don't even know if we can, like, make it up to whatever this is to investigate it. They actually turn around, go back to the base, and they told their superior, I agree. They told their superior, we don't know what's going on, but we can't get a lock on it. We can't see it, but it's making all of our instruments fail. So Parviz Jafari, a major, I believe, at the time, he went up by himself. He's like, fine, you guys,
hold my beer.
Yeah, exactly. I can imagine this dude doing that. He did. He was like, fine, you're too chicken, I'm gonna go up there. So, you know, as a veteran who'd flown so much, he was like, I'm gonna take a crack at this. He goes up, and he actually got super close to whatever this thing was and saw a structure to it. It was diamond-shaped,
cool,
which is pretty cool. I don't hear that often.
No, Close Encounters has one of those, a couple of those little, but they're little.
Right. This thing was huge.
Whoa.
He said that it was probably the size of like a Boeing, like a huge jumbo jet.
Yeah.
And
damn.
Insane, yeah. So he gets close to it, has the same problems. His instruments start to fail. But what was interesting is, as he's looking at this huge diamond thing, a smaller object came out of it and started following his plane. And that's when he started getting worried. He's like, this isn't just one thing. Like, there's some other things attached to this. And it started following him.
Like a drone came out.
Yeah. Like some sort of probe or drone started following his plane and got a lock on him. So right now he's in a dogfight with a UFO. He's following it. It's following him. He gets a lock on it. It gets a lock on him.
Does he fire at it?
So he actually was going to fire on it, but it made like these unbelievable maneuvers and got behind him and then got the lock on him. So now he's trying to outrun the UFO. And what he does is he takes a negative G nosedive.
This would be such a cool scene in a movie.
Yeah, totally. I'm just watching this.
I know. He can see it. Yeah. And this was all in the documents I got. This is crazy about this guy's testimony. So he makes a negative nose G dive or what have you and outmaneuvers it. And that thing, like, crash lands apparently into the mountains, and he doesn't know where it went from there. The diamond shaped mothership, as I presume, took off as well, you know, event over. But he goes and investigates it the next day in the town where supposedly the thing landed. No one saw anything, but they did hear some sort of explosion in the town. There was trace radiation found in the area.
Wow.
The way the Defense Intelligence Agency got involved in America is we were leasing our planes to Iran at the time. So it was our aircraft that Parviz Jafari was flying. So they wanted to know what the hell happened and what outmaneuvered our
technology.
Yeah. So that's how they got involved. They wanted to do their own personal investigation. They worked with Jafari and then eventually told him, never talk about this again.
Oh, Jesus.
So It goes even further. He spoke in front of the National Press Club in Washington about this event, and we lost him a few years ago, unfortunately.
Oh, no.
But we have all this documentation and testimony to rely on when it comes to this case. That's why it's number one for me. We have government documents, we have the testimony of a military pilot, and we have a clear cover-up as well. Don't talk about this. He did.
Wow. God, that's too bad he's gone.
I know. That seems to be the problem with a lot of these UFO cases. It's a race with the Undertaker when it comes to it.
Well, and especially Roswell, you know, like that's what when I mentioned on the main feed episode with you that when Dennis Balthazar took us around town, not only are his first secondhand witnesses dying, a lot of the original buildings are being torn down and replaced by. Yeah. So he's like, pretty soon I'm going to have fewer and fewer, I'm going to have nothing to actually point at and be like, this is where this thing was.
Yep.
So
we found that too. We were able to find, you know, third hand or distant relatives of Jesse Marcel to speak to. But yeah, like, what do you do when your first hand witnesses are gone? You know, maybe the cover up won at that point, but we're not done. A lot of UFO investigators aren't done. We're going to keep digging. Yeah.
Wow, fascinating. Oh, man, great top five listen.
Yeah, that was awesome.
News stories that we should dig into on our podcast as well. But Ryan Sprague, thank you again. Go check out his podcast, Somewhere in the Skies. Check out Roswell Mysteries Decoded. I hope you do more TV stuff because I thought you were a terrific host.
Thank you, man.
You're natural. So
Just be yourself.
I would watch the show with you hosting. Absolutely. I thought you managed to pack in so much information in those like 45 minutes. So
we tried.
Yeah. You avoided these sort of like tease it out kind of stuff that you see on a lot of these shows.
Right.
So
we wanted to inform new people of the case, but then bring something new forward. Otherwise, what the hell is that?
And not a lot of repetition, which I appreciate it for sure.
Cool.
So awesome, man. Thank you. Good luck in your future endeavors, and we'll be watching your work.
Thank you very much.
Awesome.
All right, that is it for this week's episode. I personally have to thank Michael McMillian, Bryce Johnson, and Riley Bray for letting me air this conversation. It was originally broadcasted on the Bigfoot Collectors Club Patreon feed called The Other Side. Be sure to check out all the other amazing bonus episodes of theirs by visiting patreon.com/Bigfoot Collectors Club. And also subscribe to their main show wherever you get your podcasts. Be sure to also subscribe, rate, and review Somewhere in the Skies on Apple Podcasts, your Android apps, or wherever you get the show. It helps us gain visibility and find new listeners. Thank you in advance. We're on Twitter @SomewhereSkies and Instagram @SomewhereSkiesPod.
If you want to help our show, be sure to check out the Patreon campaign, where you get bonus episodes and tons of rewards. To learn more and to contribute, visit patreon.com/somewhereskies. I will see you here next week, and remember, keep your feet on the ground, but never stop searching somewhere in the skies.
Somewhere in the Skies is produced by Third Kind Productions in association with the Entertainment One Podcast Network. To learn more, visit entertainmentonepodcast.com.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.